Thank you for listening to the Print and Packaging Lab powered by PIA Mid-America. We are a regional trade association for the printing and packaging industries. Today's Production Foundations episode looks at environmental waste streams, compliance, and best practices. PIA Mid-America partner, Clean Earth, joins Teresa Campbell for today's conversation.
Hi, thank you for joining us today. We're with Zahn Post with Clean Earth and Teresa Campbell with PIA Mid-America. Today, we're going to be talking about a very important topic to our industry, which is hazardous waste and how we handle that and manage that in our firms. Hi, Zahn. Thank you for joining us today.
Hi, Janie. And hi, Teresa. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
So I wanted to start out just with the general concept of compliance and setting the stage for us today. What are some of the guidelines that you think that everyone in our print shop should know about when we're talking about waste?
So I guess the first thing I always like to tell people from just kind of from an entry level into the waste business, because various customers and various printers have all different types of people with experience, sometimes no experience coming in. So I always say, if you're going to touch the waste in any type of way, produce the waste, package the waste, you need to be trained properly with either like record training or some DOT training that ties into the safety aspect, how to handle it properly, how to store it properly, stuff like that. Because people, you know, if you're new to the industry or new to any facility, printers or anything that packages, you may not know. And every facility is different. Every facility looks different, smells funny, smells different, smells good. Like, you just never know. So it's always good to have a good plan in place. And that always starts with proper training with either RECRA or DOT.
Right. Which we offer through our program with Clean Earth. And there are some of those sessions coming up starting the earliest later in May.
That is absolutely correct. That is absolutely correct. We do provide that to the PIA membership, and it all is all online, and we have certificates so that you can get entered into the system.
Perfect. I love that you started with this safety first philosophy, right?
Like, I mean, it really is. It ties into a lot. It really does tie into almost all of it.
Where do you think you see the biggest gaps, either in the print industry or just overall in the awareness and understanding about waste?
You know, the biggest, that's kind of a very, I'm going to say, jawbreaker question, because there's lots of layers to that question. The biggest disconnect, I guess, that is out there is, I guess, the right ways to dispose of your waste and or recycle your waste. And I say that because not all waste is just waste. It could be a byproduct. It could be used. It could be beneficially reused. So I guess the first key identifying that would be to identify what type of waste it is and how it classifies.
Yeah.
Because it's not a waste until somebody deems it a waste, right? Like, it can be a drum of, you never know. It could just be a drum of just something sitting there. It's really a waste. But until the client says, I need to get rid of this, then the clock is ticking that you need to get rid of it.
Right. And depending on what it is, depends on how it gets classified, and our safety data sheets play a part in that. But how they store the material plays a huge part in that as well.
Exactly right.
I would like to say that the printing industry altogether has come a long way in making solvents, inks, oils, adhesive that are much cleaner than they were decades before.
Exactly.
However, there are still some things that we want to be able to keep our environment safe, our workers safe, and leave a safe place for future generations. So soy ink is terrific, but we have machines that generate imaging oil. We don't want to put that imaging oil mixed with solvents, because then it can't be used potentially to make something else. So something really cool that most of our industry doesn't know is imaging oil that's coming off of a press can be used in a secondary process to make concrete. And that is only possible if it stays imaging oil alone and we don't have a mixture of waste that has to go to landfill or has to go to incineration. So talk a little bit about keeping it separate.
Yeah. So in specifically what you were talking about is when we at Clean Earth, one of our core assets that we have is the ability to treat waste on site and to consolidate it for a fuels blending. And what that is we take waste in specifically from the printing industry, we treat it on site, and we bulk it, and we get it to a certain BTU value, which is already high as it is. And once it gets to the perfect recipe, we send that off for what we call alternative fuels. And we do use that for kilns that are used to make concrete.
I love that.
It's a really neat process. You know, many years ago, you could either burn waste or you could bury waste. And now those are the probably the two least utilized options and methods for disposing of waste right now. So the technology has come a long way. You know, the technology for going green is growing every day. And I've been doing this for 25 years. So I have seen a lot happen between now and then, and how really creative we can get with, quote, these waste streams. Yeah, they're waste streams, but to a lot of us, you know, they're beneficial reuse. We use them for a lot of other different things. So it's more than just landfilling it and incinerating it. Now we truly reuse the waste for something else.
That's really cool and exciting to know. Truly.
And some of it is pretty clean waste, like the imaging oil that I was talking about. Some of it still is not. Our UV coatings still have some properties that are toxic than others. And so we're always balancing that. Let's try and keep it clean as possible and go to fuel blending, go to landfill when possible, and go to incineration last. We talked about
exactly
that.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's kind of just falls kind of like what you said in the tier of desirability. You know, I mean, any of these methods of treating waste is certainly legal. We certainly falls within our compliance. Some things you have to landfill, some things you have to incinerate. Mm-hmm. There's just, you just can't fuels blend everything. It's got to be the right recipe. So yeah, fuels blending is by far our preferred method. And I think most preferred methods. You can landfill. They do have landfill gas to energy technology out there. And even with incineration on the back end, they do create some steam on some incinerators. I know that are coming online that will do that in the future too. But right now for the past decade, and probably for the next foreseeable 2 or 3 or 4 years, that alternative fuels blending is a really great method and preferred method and cost efficient method of getting rid of waste, specifically in the printing and the packing industry. I mean, it's abundant. It seems to be what a lot of printers generate out of the back end. So it's a good way of doing it.
Yeah. I guess that's a great segue. Teresa, tell us about some of the things that our companies, our member companies are producing that is waste.
Certainly. You know, presses are machines, and to run a press, it takes patience. So there are oils, there are gases, there are certainly solvents. If you look at the litho side, the offset side of our industry, that is an oil-based ink. And to clean up an oil-based ink, you have to have a solvent to do it. Well, that solvent is not clean. It has to be environmentally disposed of. If we look at flexography, more the printing plastics packaging of our industry, or corrugated board, it's a water-based ink, but the chemicals that are needed to make the plastic plate to print the Flexo Press takes a lot of chemicals or chemistry to wash away the non-image area of a plastic plate. So that's where the majority of their waste is on the processing side, not on the ink side, where lithos is more on the ink and solvent side. So depending on which process you're in, it could mean different things to you. On the wide format side, white ink is very corrosive and can't be put down the drain. So that's important to know.
Are there things that people might think is not a waste product, or is a waste product that they're not handling right?
Unless you want to take it away, Teresa, I'm going to say absolutely yes. There is a big misconception, and that all goes back to the safety and the education on the front end. When in doubt, just ask. Don't pour it down the drain. Don't do anything with it. Don't flush it down the toilet. Save it, store it properly. Find out. Labels are important. Most anything virgin material or not should be labeled and have proper notifications on it, whether it be, you know, handle with care, use respirator, use gloves, whatever. So if you don't know, just ask. There's no shame in keeping it stored safely and asking. But yes.
Well, and that kind of goes back to the SDS. I mean, all of that information has to be public and available to all the workers, to all the companies, employees, vendors, and so forth. And so it is readily available to know how flammable it is, to know if it's an eye irritant, what to do if you were to get a chemical in your eye. And so knowledge is power. Want them to do the right thing. And certainly in cases where we shouldn't just assume, oh, well, I thought it was water-based ink, so we put it down the drain, when it has a component in it that was not safe to put down the drain.
Exactly right. Sometimes intentions are good, but knowledge is I'm going to say, good.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. So I think that probably leans into the next question here. There's improper handling, there's storage time limits, documentation gaps. Where do you see that print shops or other firms are getting into potentially hot water the most? What do they need to really be thinking about in terms of their hazardous waste storage and removal?
Probably the balancing act that every industry faces, and that is probably cost versus the compliance. And the reality of that, the compliance is big. I know I know companies are really wanting to stay and focus heavier on compliance issue than they probably have in the past. And it could derive from a bunch of different things, right? Like if you manage your waste better, that's normally a cost savings, but it's also mm-hmm. better for the company to do that. It prevents NOVs, which are, you know, fines that you get from the EPA, and it's all sorts of stuff. It just opens the door and puts a spotlight on a company that you don't necessarily want or need to have. And it's all avoidable. Like I said, it just goes back to the, the safety aspect, knowing, but you know, all of that can keep a company out of hot water, and it can keep their employees safe. It can keep their employees out of hot water. If an employee is signing a manifest, they should be absolutely DOT and record trained. It is their name on the waste description. They are the company. They are, I guess, the representative of the company. They're signing off. That's a big deal. A lot of people don't think signing a manifest is a big deal. It's really a big deal. When done right, it's wonderful. That's the way it should be. But if it's ever done wrong and you start having compliance issues, then it's probably not very good.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little deeper. You know, there's a lot of times you've just got somebody back on the dock that's signing receipt or
right.
or releasing a product, right? And
right.
they may not understand the true implications of what that signature means. I mean, sometimes they're extending a contract, like if they're extending receiving PALs, and sometimes they're saying, I'm certifying something in a legal way. And that's
right.
big and scary.
Yeah, it is. It is big and scary. And I know Clean Earth, I can't speak for all companies, but I've been doing this a long time. And when we send out the proper paperwork and the manifesting and the labels, we do that based on the waste description. We know what waste are coming in. We know exactly how many drums are coming in. We know exactly how much of is in what drum. We know what driver's coming. We know the customer. Like we know we can normally eliminate most all possible hazards or complications to come up. But I mean, at the end of the day, we're all humans trying to get rid of waste. And so, I mean, these things do happen, but we have a lot of precautions in place that can keep from doing that. But once our customer gets our paperwork, it's correct on our end. Where it can get, I guess, confusing is sometimes between the time a customer calls in to get picked up and the day that the driver shows up, which is a couple of days time lapse. They could have added another drum, which is fine. You know, we always try to accommodate that as long as that drum is profiled and approved and all of that stuff. And it's when they just kind of throw in a drum of unknown. Oh, hey, let's just get rid of this, too. You know, that's not good for us. That's not good for the generator either. That rarely happens, but you know, it does happen. And we train our drivers to notify that and make sure that we have a proper drum count that was put in with the submitted with the order. And like I said, PIA, they know how many drums all of their members are producing and what they're going to order. And so all of that. So we try to keep a pretty close lid on that. And I feel like we do a pretty good job on that.
It takes some paperwork though, is what I would say. And sometimes that gets frustrating when you have waste on your dock that you're trying to get rid of and it's in the way. And then we say, oh my goodness, we need to profile these SDS sheets. Let's get through the paperwork and that takes some time. And so I try to warn our members that sooner we know that you have it and that you're using it and the sooner we can profile it, the better, because then when you need it picked up, we're ready to go. It's not a hang on. We need to start with the paperwork.
Yeah. Exactly.
And I love that each of you brought up what you did, because the profile might seem like paperwork, but it's really another layer of safety. And that is king in our industry.
Huge right. layer of safety, Janie. I would say, you know, a warehouse worker on a dock that's asked to sign a manifest has no idea the impact that they could be having on society and other people's lives. We need to know that it's right. We need to know what's on that truck. If that truck is on the road and gets into an accident with another vehicle, and what we said was in there is not exactly what is actually in there, you're putting people's lives in danger. You're putting,
exactly right.
You know, if they get into an accident with another vehicle and it's your family is at risk. And I want those workers to realize it's really, really important to keep our society safe.
It really is. Very well said.
And I think here's a moment to say, at least in my belief, our members are providing the right paperwork. They're signing off the right things. They've got the proper training. So We're obeying all the safety rules and regulations in order to make sure that what we're doing goes on to clean earth in the right way. And I know you are doing the same thing.
Yeah, we are very fortunate to service a lot of PIA members. And I cannot think of a single time that we've had any kind of major issues with paperwork or safety or anything. I can honestly say that probably the PIA members that Teresa and Lori represent have done very, very well in that area. So that's a huge
proud
bonus.
Of that. I mean, our industry wants to do the right thing. And, you know, I see if I had to say, you know, where's the area where PIA members do really well, but where could they do better? I think it's trying to understand the volume or the time-based compliance and what category they fit in. So I'd say the majority of our members are what we call small generators. There are some that are bigger, and different states have different regulations. It's hard to keep track of all of that. So do they have to comply, have a pickup once a month, once a quarter, once a year, and is once a year the minimum? And does it depend on the state?
Right. It's a lot. It's a lot. No two sites are alike. No two sites are exactly alike. And that gets very, it's like having 200 children. You know, yes, they come from the same mother, the same dad, but they all have their own personalities and their own desires and their own things. And Teresa hit it right on the head. It's very confusing. But organization is the key on keeping up with all of that. Communication is the key. Paperwork is the key. So we seem to manage it well. I'm proud to work with such an organized organization that allows us to pick up waste. So I'll just say that.
Yeah. Zahn, would you say that in general, and I know this is a very general rule, that you should probably get the waste off your floor once a year?
Yes, okay. Yes. At a minimum, even if you're not required to by law, just because waste is waste, right? And if it's sitting around, it's more apt to get spilled or knocked over or neglected. The biggest thing that I see is a customer that does not generate very much waste at all will have a drum of something. And over time, the labels or the identification of whatever the contents of that drum, and it could even be virgin material, but if the label deteriorates and falls off, you don't know what it is. And then you're stuck with an unknown drum that nobody knows. It's a lot of red flags. Is this drum safe? What is it? We don't know. And then we have to bring in a team to test it, and you've got to send off for analytical. Not only is that not necessarily safe because you're dealing with something you don't know with what it is, then you're also dealing with an expense. And because you've got to test for unknowns, you've got to test for all of this stuff. You've got to determine what was in that drum. So it gets it creates a lot of complications that can be very easily prevented. So even if you don't feel like you have a lot of waste, if you have anything, at a minimum, get rid of it every year.
That's a great point. Every tax day or every something. Just go ahead and plan to make that call. I'm just going to ask you, when you walk into a print facility for the first time, the first things that you start to evaluate when you're looking at a waste stream?
So I always like to do, you know, and being in this business, obviously, I always like to have my homework done on what type of company they are, what they produce, what they make, possible waste that could be generated, so that I'm going in thinking not so broad. I can kind of get honed in a little bit more, knowing kind of right off the bat what I'm dealing with and what to be on the lookout for. You know, if they generate lots of liquid waste, is there 90-day storage, or what, maybe not even their 90-day storage, if just their storage is properly properly utilized, if it has a proper containment area, if it has a spill kit area around it, if it's a large quantity generator, making sure where the trucks come in and out of are safe. What are my drivers going? I'm trying to be the eyes of everybody, right? Like our profile approver, I'm trying to go be his eyes when I submit for the waste profile characteristic. I'm trying to be the truck driver's eyes, seeing what the docks look like, the loading docks look like, the equipment that the company will have, the manpower they may or may not have, the knowledge they may or may not have. So I kind of look for all of these things so I can kind of report back, say, hey guys, this is what we've got. They're going to have, you know, easy access dock, or it's going to be an alleyway and you're going to have to truck it with the dolly a little bit, or, you know, just something to kind of be as prepared for, not only for my drivers, but also for the customer. So
both from an efficiency side and from a cost effective side, you know,
right.
I'm looking, I'm thinking, okay, it's flammable. That means if it's sitting next to the press, it's got to be in a flammable resistant container or drum. But then once we accumulate it and it moves off from the side of the press, where does it go? Does it have to be in a flame-proof cabinet? It can't just sit on the dock if it's flammable and those type of things. But it also could be beneficial is where I was going with that. For instance, we have a member in the Dallas market that really could save a lot of money if Clean Earth can bring in a vacuum truck. And so because PIA meets with Clean Earth weekly and talks about options, there is right next to their dock door. It's actually pretty easy to have a vacuum versus canisters and make it easy for them. What other type of solutions like that would you say are positives in the...
You know, you kind of hit it right on. You said that it was close to the collection area, and that is key on those issues on customers like that have the room or the capability to have sucked out. That's certainly an option. I assume you've talked with Mark about this.
And, yes.
Okay, then we should be having a vac truck out there. Is it now? That's not the most cost effective way, but if it's a safe, environmentally friendly way, and customers okay with how we do that, all means we can do that. It makes no difference to us, because at the end of the day, we want to make sure the waste is picked up and treated accordingly. So that's certainly doable. A lot of customers have storage tanks outside that they can pump material directly into, and then it eliminates the amount of waste, the pickups, because as you know, not only are you paying for the waste disposal, but you're paying for the transportation to get the waste to and from. Often that is as much as disposal, and sometimes more depending on where you are. So the more you have the ability to store waste on site safely, then that goes back to compliance and the amount of money it costs to get rid of waste. So if you can store it and then just have one tanker come suck it out like every 6 months or even once a year, then you're only paying for pickup once a year. So yes, there is some upfront cost to doing that, but shipping in containers and drums is just not always conducive. It's not everybody can do that.
And that's really where some of our members rely on PIA, because we meet with you guys weekly, because we're always looking at the most efficient way or how to be the most cost effective. There are lots of things in the printing industry that can go into refurbished totes.
Right.
Those are less expensive than a brand new tote, but sometimes our members don't always know that, and we have to replace the tote if we're taking it away.
Right. Refurbished totes, refurbished drums, even overpacks if they have drums that are not so desirable. Overpacks, there's lots of different ways you can get waste out of there safely and effectively.
I think we're just about out of time for today. So two quick ending questions. Zahn, what are 2 to 3 actions that you think a plant manager could take this quarter to improve their waste handling?
Well, I will put my thoughts specifically towards the printing industry, and they're a huge part of our business as well. I would say the first thing I would do, and I'm thinking from a plant manager leadership mindset, is my waste being treated, classified as it should be? And sometimes people in leaderships that high up wear so many different hats, and is this waste code being applied to my waste the right way is probably not high on their priority list. But I highly recommend them getting in front of their environmental personnel and say, is this the best way to do this? What can PIA do to help us better understand our waste, better handle our waste? What can Clean Earth do? What can we do together? That's probably the first question I would ask myself, which ties back into training my people properly. I keep saying it all goes back to training and education, but I'm telling you, every hiccup, every mishap that I've seen happened because somebody just simply didn't know. Wonderful people, great long-term employees have been doing their job for so many years wonderfully, but they just didn't know something, and it caused a mishap, whether it be a safety mishap or a very costly financial mishap. Just educate your people, and you know, don't, if you're shorthanded, just don't just rush to get something done when it comes to your waste. Make sure it's done right, because I can assure you that is probably key, is just getting the right person to do it and asking the right questions.
That's a great takeaway. Teresa, we had a win this year, which I think goes into Zahn's first point, is knowing what your waste is. You want to share that story real quick?
Remind me which one we're talking about. I want to say we've had several wins.
I mean, I can't keep up with you guys. Y'all have more, you have more members joining than I've ever seen, and it's fantastic.
Love it. Fort Worth.
Yes. Oh, yes, yes, yes. And so this is a great example where I have a member that had some UV coating that was shipped from another one of their plants, and they couldn't use it in that location. And instead of sending it back, it was more efficient just to dispose of it. But it was unused UV coating. That UV coating really triggered a concern of, does it need to go to incineration? Well, the incineration cost was a lot more money than than landfill, but we could get our team engaged with Clean Earth, pull those SDS sheets, go back to the manufacturer, the ink manufacturer, dig down into the details of the SDS, look really closely at the profiles and say, what is it that we think is triggering for incineration? And it was multiple totes of UV coating. And in this instance, everybody from the ink manufacturer to the Clean Earth profiler could agree that it was not as hazardous as they once believed, and it could go to landfills. So we were able to save the member a lot of money, and it was a huge win.
Well, and I think that says so much about the collaboration of this partnership that's been decades long and what we can provide to our community. So.
Yeah. Janie, I would say I don't want our members to just think about group buying and getting better rates because they're a part of the group. You got to think about the advocacy part, all of the customer support that goes into it to try and help our industry to stay safe and manage it start to finish and be compelled. A lot goes into it. Right.
Thank you both for being on today. This was a great conversation.
I'm honored to be a part of it and flattered you asked. I appreciate it. I'm very proud of Clean Earth and what we do and what we offer. And PIA has been a delight to work for. They've been such a great partnership. You know, they just came on. I thought just another, you know, another customer that deals with inks. And then the more we deal with them, I'm like, okay, these guys are actually, I mean, they're actually changing the industry for good and like for the positive, and they're getting people involved. And it's really neat to see. So I'm just honored and grateful for you guys. So thank you for having me.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the Print and Packaging Lab podcast powered by PIA Mid-America. Contact us to learn more about membership and for access to this and other content made for the printing and packaging industry. Get in touch by emailing us at info@piamidam.org.